Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk radio show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody, and you are going to be in for a musical treat today. My guest today is Reuner Carroll. He is the co-founder and CEO of the Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, and he's also a former member of the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. Welcome to the show, Reuner.
Thank you very much, Marcia.
Well, I'm looking forward to sharing your story because it's unique and it's special, and I'm happy to have you join us. And before we start talking about you and your background and all of that kind of stuff that I want to ask you about, I thought you could just take a moment or two and just tell our audience a little bit about yourself. You know, where'd you grow up? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I'm a longtime resident of Pasadena. I grew up in and love Southern California. I did all of my schooling here, Pasadena High School, Cal State LA, where I majored in music performance and composition. I am the youngest of five siblings. My mom and dad created a very nurturing environment that allowed me to, let's say, pursue my passion for music. My wife has a life in the arts. Her career included museum education, and she's a violinist also. She doesn't consider herself professional, but that's besides. Together, we enjoy, you know, going to see plays, musicals, concerts, and traveling around the world.
That's just great. Were your parents musical as well?
Well, they were, but they were not professional. My mom played the piano, and dad sang in the church choir. So there was always music in the house, and all styles, all styles of music, too.
That's terrific. So a local guy like me, but let's start by talking about the Philharmonic Orchestra, because that is really an illustrious career that you had there. What was it like being a member of that Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra?
Well, for me, it was my dream job. I mean, I always kid and say, imagine someone pays you to play the drums. And, you know, winning that audition was like, okay, the next 33 years, you're going to play the drums. You know, and it was my passion. I mean, it still is, but imagine being a student, and I was 25 at the time, and they had an audition the year before, and I must say, thank goodness, they did not accept anyone. So they had the audition again the following year, and I was in the right place, right time. I was ready. And, you know, it was just amazing. I mean, we traveled the world. I perform with some of the most amazing musicians, soloists, world-renowned conductors like Leonard Bernstein, there's Simon Rattle, Pierre Boulez, Zubin Mehta, Esa-Pekka Salonen, and Gustavo Dudamel, just to name a few. It was a very busy schedule, but, you know, again, it's exactly what I wanted to do.
You know, there's a lot of people that have careers, but they aren't necessarily doing what their passion is all about. So how fortunate for you. You mentioned the drums.
Yeah.
Is that what you were? You played the drums?
Yeah. I mean, and technically in the orchestra, we're known as percussionists because it's not just a drum. And percussion itself, pretty much defined as any instrument that's played by striking with your hand or with a stick or a mallet or you shake. So to give you an example, some of the traditional classical percussion instruments include the big kettle drums that are in the back of the orchestra, in the middle usually, the snare drum, bass drum, cymbals, triangle, tambourine, castanets, the gong, chimes, bells, xylophone, vibraphone, marimba. Those are pretty much the standard, but the non-standard is, the list is much longer, and I'll only mention a few. Some of the very odd things are like from a car, the brake drum from a car, the taxi horns, the spring coil of a car. I've had to play that. Tune, specifically tuned cowbells, water gong, a gong that you dip into the water and raise up from the water, tuned flower pots, an ocean drum, a wind machine, of course, a rain stick. So that's just a small sample of what is expected a percussionist to do.
Wow, that's fascinating. I would imagine most people didn't know that. They certainly wouldn't have thought of playing a flower pot. I guess if you have a mallet. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's not one of the classes I took in school,
yes.
You know, how to play a flower pot.
Well, let me ask you this. So you mentioned so many different instruments, from the xylophone to the triangle, but that's because I'm picturing a stick or a mallet or something like that in your hand. Let me ask you this. If you were playing the bongos, I think that's what they were called, and you used your hands, does that still classify or no?
Oh, yes.
It does.
Basically,
okay.
Anything you strike, whether you use your hand or a stick or you shake it or whatever, yeah, that's all a part
I
of
see.
Percussion.
Interesting. So how long were you actually with the Philharmonic?
I was there for 33 years. I auditioned in November of 1983 and retired in September of 2016, so 33 years.
Wow, that's a long time. I bet you saw a lot of changes over the years, didn't you?
I did, both on and off stage. From, I believe I had 4 music directors and obviously lots and lots of guest conductors, but the orchestra changed and evolved over the years, and as did the administration. So, yeah.
I'm sure that's true. That's interesting. And the Philharmonic played in multiple different places too, didn't they?
Yeah. When I joined the orchestra, our home was the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, part of the Music Center. And then in 2003, we opened up a fantastic Walt Disney Concert Hall. And we were there. Well, they're still there, but I had the pleasure of inaugurating and then playing there for about, 13 years before I retired. But before the Disney Hall was built, I would always say that the orchestra sounded best when we're on tour, because we always played in these fantastic concert halls, you know, whether it's the Carnegie Hall in New York, the Music Verein in Vienna, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm sorry to say, back at home, the Dorothy Chandler is really a multi-purpose hall that really was not built specifically for an orchestra. It was meant to have many different purposes, including opera, ballet, concerts, et cetera. So it really wasn't fine-tuned to an orchestra performance. But Disney is, and listeners out there have not heard a concert there, please go. You'll be amazed. You might have the greatest stereo, but this beats that. This is hi-fi on the nth degree.
And is for those of us that may not know this, are these orchestras always an indoor event? Are they ever outdoor events?
Oh, well, a part of the Philharmonic season is playing outdoors at the Hollywood Bowl every summer from July through mid-September. That's our summer season, and it's a busy, busy season, whereas at Disney Hall, we basically do a program every week. At the Bowl, we do at least 2, if not 3, different programs every week throughout the entire summer. So that's a lot of music.
That is a lot of music.
But, you know, it's so enjoyable, because not only do the musicians enjoy playing their instrument, but obviously we enjoy playing for the audience. And to see the audience response is just, it makes it so worthwhile.
Absolutely. So undoubtedly, when I went to the Hollywood Bowl maybe 8 or 9 years ago, you were there. And there's really something to be said from listening to that kind of music. It does touch your heart. So what were your responsibilities as the principal percussionist there?
Well, there's many. So not only was I not only was I a performer but also administrator, in that weeks, if not a month ahead of a program, I'd go to the librarian and get the parts that are laid out for all the instruments that are needed, and I'd review the parts for a program, and I'd have to assign them to the section, because in the percussion, we all play all the instruments, but it's different from, let's say, the clarinet. In the clarinet, there's a first clarinet that plays the first clarinet part. There's a second clarinet that plays specifically second clarinet, and so on. But for percussion, we all play everything, so someone, and that's a principal, me, has to decide for each program, each piece, who plays what. Who plays the bass drum, who plays the snare drum, who plays the cymbals, et cetera. So that was one thing. I had to assign the parts. And then for many pieces, there were more than three percussionists required. We had three. So I was in part a personnel manager. I had to hire extra players for the section. Many times we needed five or six players, which meant I had to hire two or three extra players. I have to maintain a list of the instruments that are required for each piece. I have to provide that list to the stage crew, and I have to provide them with a setup chart so that they know where the instruments are positioned for each composition, not just the entire program, for each composition, because it's all logistics. I have to ensure that the setup is correct, so I usually get to rehearsal early, and I usually stay after a little bit late too. I have to maintain all the instruments, do some small repairs. I'm in charge of purchasing and or renting instruments as needed. I keep a detailed inventory. So that kind of gives you a clue that it's not just what you see on stage. But principal percussion is very different from any other musician in the orchestra, where we are administrators also, besides performers.
Does the conductor decide what music you're going to play? Do they set that up?
In part, they do. The music director has more say with that, because the music director works with the artistic director of the orchestra. Usually it's two separate people. But our music directors are typically only with us maybe, don't know exactly, but maybe 20 weeks, and that sounds like a lot, out of a year. All of the other times we have guest conductors. And the guest conductor will meet a year, maybe even 2 years ahead of time with the artistic administrator and decide on what the program will be at any different week. Yes, yes.
And nobody's memorized it. I mean, you're looking at music.
Yeah, we typically don't have to memorize. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, rare occasions. Yeah, we will need to memorize a short passage here or there, but typically it's all written, yeah.
I see. Well, what drew you to percussion and classical music to start with?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there was always music in my household growing up. My dad sang, my mom played the piano. Plus, Dad always played a variety of music on the record player and the radio, whether it was Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Mancini, Sinatra. I'd hear Ravel's Bolero, Tchaikovsky, Rimsky-Korsakov, Scheherazade, and shows and soundtracks, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Korngold, Max Steiner, like all of the James Bond soundtracks.
Sure.
It was just regular things that I heard at home all the time. And, looking back, this really had a significant influence on my ear for music. Plus, I always wanted to do my own thing. My oldest brother was really into soul and rhythm and blues. My middle brother was more so into jazz and funk. So I just needed to do something different. And that's how I was drawn to classical and percussion itself. I always say that I didn't choose it, but it chose me. It's just something about the sound of a drum that always drew me in very close to.
You know, I can so understand this, and here's my relatable that sounds a little silly, but it won't probably to you. I always have music on in my car, always. Now, I tend to listen to classic, you know, old music, not symphonies and things like that. But when I have my hands on the steering wheel, it's not that I'm not safe, but I can't help but beat my steering wheel to the beat of whatever it is I'm listening to. And I'm thinking to myself, are people watching this because I'm beating my steering wheel like it's a drum? It's just something that's, you know, I'm thank you for chuckling. There's just something internal about music. I've always loved music, too. I attempted to play the piano, but I didn't want to practice, so obviously I wasn't very good at it and didn't keep doing it. But I've always loved music of all kinds, and so I can appreciate growing up, like you had mentioned, in a musical family. That's pretty cool. And I'm just wondering, what were some of the major factors that helped you to reach your goal of becoming a classical percussionist?
Well, it definitely started at home again. The parental support, the guidance, and I think perhaps most importantly, the discipline that they instilled in me.
Sure.
You know, because what you do as a classical musician, and more so than other areas of music, is it's so structured. So if you don't have the discipline to get the lessons, you need consistent, regular lessons because you need that guidance. And you need the discipline of, as you were saying earlier, practice. I mean, you have to be consistent with that to really get to a certain point. So that was brought to me by my parents. They laid the law down early that, for instance, if I wanted to go out Saturday afternoon and go to a movie or whatever, well, fine, but you need to do your household chores in the morning. You know, you got to get up, you got to go out and cut the grass, and you got to sweep the yard and blah, blah, blah. And then you have the, so I realized and I learned from a young age that, you know, this is how it goes. You take care of business first, and then you get, so, you know, when I started studying classical music as in percussion, I understood lessons. I have to get those lessons. I need that guidance. And then outside of the lessons, I need to do my homework. I need to practice. And, you know, there are certain times when you don't feel like it. There's certain times you maybe want to go out with friends or whatever, but there are certain sacrifices you have to make. But it's like the deeper you go down this, I don't want to call it a rabbit hole, but the further you get down, it's like, wow, it just pays off in so many ways. I remember being a senior in high school and we went to Geneva, Switzerland to play in a festival there. I mean, it's just amazing. And that was just a clue for me that what music could do for me if I just pursued it and stuck with it and got serious with it. So,
Wow. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, besides my parents, I had great teachers. I started off pretty much around seventh grade in the Boys Club band here in Pasadena. And I'll never forget the director there, Paul Killian. I did some private lessons with him, and he was very encouraging and got me started. And then the Pasadena Public Schools had fantastic band and orchestra directors there, Candy Schoenholtz, never forget her, Andrew Bumate and John Work in high school, very influential and encouraging me to just keep doing. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to college, Cal State LA, my teacher, Mitchell Peters, who was principal at the LA Phil, was the same way. He's so encouraging, so helpful. And looking back, definitely he was my mentor when I was that young. And I had no idea at some point I would be co-principal with my teacher at the LA Phil.
Isn't that something? You know, I was thinking back to my high school days, and I guess we did have an orchestra, but I just remember we had a marching band, and, you know,
right.
with the cheerleaders before a football game or something like that, and there were
right.
certainly a lot of drummers in that. Now, did you do that too?
Oh, of course, yeah. That's a part of the whole experience. That's the
yeah.
journey. That's the social fun. I mean, it's musical too, but I think it's more fun than anything.
Sure.
Rehearsing, practicing after school, every day after school in the fall to do your halftime shows. And then on
mm-hmm.
Fridays, you know, we'd come to the band room early in the evening and practice a bit. And then we all get onto the buses and go to the football game. And we'd sit and play in the stands. Then at halftime, we'd do a halftime
yep.
show. And it was a great experience to do that. One thing, my wife being a violinist, she never experienced that. So it's too bad.
Right.
She always wanted to play in the band. Well, you picked the wrong instrument. There's no violins in the marching band.
That's so funny. Well, I've appreciated hearing this background about you, but I do want to talk about what's near and dear to your heart and what you started, and that is the Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, and it's the ABOP. And for those of you listening, if you are just like really curious about this, and I will certainly have this on my website, but they have a beautiful, beautiful website for them, and you just simply type in the WWs, and it's ABOP.us. And when you do that, you will see their website, and you will see all these different young people and teachers that are working with young people. So we're going to talk about that now. When did your organization actually get started? Because I know you were part of the founding of this. When did this begin?
Right, in 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, I arranged a Zoom session with my Black colleagues from across the country, and there's
mm-hmm.
not many of us, so it was the principal symphonist. If I'm going to remember all this, principal symphonist from the National Symphony in D.C., the former principal symphonist for the Pittsburgh Symphony, the principal symphonist for the New Mexico Philharmonic, former principal symphonist of the Seattle Symphony, principal percussionist for the Kansas City Philharmonic at the time, and someone I refer to as the Black Godfather of all the percussion instructors. So there were seven of us in all,
mm-hmm.
And I started with an initial Zoom session, which I said, you know, individually we have all had and are having amazing careers, but collectively I thought that we could do something more powerful, and that is to guide new generations of Black percussionists. That's how we got started.
Right. Did you use the word synthesis? What was the word that you used? Because it wasn't a word I was familiar with when you were talking about this. Was it synthesis? What was the word that you used?
Talking about what?
When you were getting this first started in 2021, and you were arranging with the Black colleagues, what did you give them a category? Because you didn't call them percussionists, I didn't think, but maybe I just misheard.
Go
ahead.
Many of them are timpanists. That means they
timpanists.
They play the kettle drum. Timpanists, yes.
Okay,
yes.
I wasn't so a timpanist specifically plays a kettle drum.
Right.
I see.
Now,
percussionists.
Percussionists technically play everything, but in
mm-hmm.
an orchestra, there's usually two separate positions. One is for timpani only, more or less, and then
mm-hmm.
the other is for all the other percussion instruments. So that's how we divide those up in an orchestra.
I see. So like a xylophone or something like that, which, you know, when we were children, we had those kind of toys. Right? I mean, seems like I had a xylophone when I was a kid that you just kind of took a mallet and you just kind of bang those I don't know if you call them keys, but with that metal.
Bars.
What do you call that?
Yeah, metal bars.
Metal bars. Okay. It seems like that was something that I feel like I almost had as a toy when I was a child. So why did you start this? Why did you believe that this is something that was really important to get started?
Well, that's easy. There are no other organizations doing this. That's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. There are several programs and fellowships that are focused on training Black, Indigenous, and people of color orchestral instruments, mm-hmm. whether it's violin, flute, trumpet, percussion included, but mm-hmm. none that focus solely on teaching and mentoring orchestral percussion to Black students.
I see. All right.
But
so
it was a big hole that needed to be filled, I felt.
That's you know, I when I was in high school, and I grew up here in Westchester, when my children were at Westchester High School, it was a predominantly Black, you know, depending upon how you want to be socially, you know, some people say Black, some people use different terms to describe that. But, you know, Inglewood High School, obviously. But I just don't remember if there were bands there back then. I suspect that there were. There had to be marching bands when my kids were there. So it's just interesting to me as I reflect on my own personal experience. And your website is fabulous. And I thought maybe you could just share with our listeners what your mission is, because I know that every nonprofit has a mission.
Yeah. So our mission and what we aim to do is to increase the diversity of percussionists in symphony orchestras by providing guidance and support to Black orchestral percussionists through a comprehensive mentorship program that will be mm-hmm. administered by a community of dedicated musicians, educators, and businesses.
Nice.
So this is because of the lack of diversity in orchestras, and specifically for me, what relates to me is the percussion sections. As I perform, as I talk with my colleagues, as I teach at different universities, it's very apparent. And I thought, well, you know, the entire subject itself is a big thing to deal with. Let me do what I can, and that means percussion specifically.
Sure. So do you personally visit? You mentioned you lived in Pasadena. So do you personally visit some of the high schools, even middle schools there that gets kids interested in doing this?
Yes. Yes. That's
great.
So important. It's mm-hmm. it's the exposure.
Right.
I mean, they all know a drum, they've all seen a drum, but putting it into context of a symphony orchestra is a very new thing for them. And it's eye-opening, and it gives me such joy when I see a young kid, whether they're 6, 7, 8, or 12 or 13 years old, and
mm-hmm.
to see their excitement of having their hand on the drum and producing a sound. It takes me back to when I was a kid, and I expect that. And like I said, I was so drawn to it. And to see that is fantastic, to have that connection with the student.
I bet. But how do you – I just was thinking about these kids, and we're talking about a genre of music that's not something that you'd hear in a rock and roll band. I'm using rock and roll as aging myself, because – You're not looking to recruit drummers that's for Fleetwood Mac. I mean, that's what I'm saying, right?
Right.
The drummers,
right. Yes.
The percussion, let me use the correct word here because you're educating me. So the percussionists that you're talking about are of a genre of symphonic music as opposed to, you know, the music that we hear on the radio on K-Earth. You know what I'm saying? I'm right about that,
yes.
Right?
Exactly, and that type of a drummer is typically playing a drum set, which is a set of drums that is played in, let's say, a dance band or a popular band. So, yes, we do that, but that's not our main thing. Our main thing is playing the orchestral music that, let's just say, a Beethoven, a Mozart, a Tchaikovsky, or in a 20th mm-hmm. century composer would have composed for a complete percussion section, not just a set of drums, a drum set.
You're not looking for Ringo Starr here. You're looking for something different.
I mean, we'll take a young Ringo Starr, and, you know, we'll try to teach him to play the marimba also, but that's
yes.
not our main focus. Yeah.
I understand. So what makes studying percussion so much more difficult or different from studying other instruments?
That's easy. That's the instruments and their excess. So, for example, most musicians, whether it's a violinist, a trumpet player, a clarinetist, they can carry their instrument with them throughout the day. You know, they
mm-hmm.
take it to school. At lunchtime, they can take it out and practice. They have rehearsal at school. Then they take it home after school and practice at home. Percussion, we can't do any of that, basically. So let me, for a college audition, and use that as an example, when you're in high school, you're preparing for your college audition. Yeah, you know, again, all the other instruments, they have their instrument and they can take it home and they can work with it and they take it to the audition. For percussionists, they need to prepare what we call a mallet sole. That's on a mallet instrument, which should be a marimba, a xylophone, a vibraphone, etc. Most students do not have one at home. A lot mm-hmm. of high schools don't have a decent mallet instrument. And that's just the start. They also have to play and prepare a concert snare drum solo. So again, if they're a drummer, they have a snare drum in their drum set, or they may have a snare drum in the marching band, but a concert snare drum is very different from these type of snare drums. So that's two. And then the third area that is required on your college audition is a timpani solo. So the timpani, again, that's the big kettle drums. So, you know, it's having access to those instruments. This makes it such a challenge for percussionists because of, number one, the cost of you put all those instruments together, and the logistics, because except for the snare drum, these are large instruments that are just not practical to have in your house. And let me throw in a little personal story there to show you for me how fortunate I was in high school. I believe it was the summer between my junior and senior year. I noted that, you know, we finished school and the instruments would be there all summer. I went to the band director and I asked him, would it be okay if I took the set of five kettle drums home for the summer? And he said, yes, yeah, sure. So I found a buddy, a trumpet player, I remember. He had a pickup. So we drove up to the school, loaded five kettle drums into the back, took them to my house. My parents were fine with this, which I still can't believe. We took them in the house, and in the living room were five kettle drums. And Marcia, I have to tell you, especially looking back now, that was such an influential moment for me for that summer, because I had the instrument with me every day the entire summer, which normally I would have the instrument at school, you know, four or 5 days a week for just a limited amount of time. But that summer I had the kettle drums every day I could practice. And that's what I did. I took advantage of it. And every day I practiced and played, and it propelled me without belief for that summer. So
I bet.
Getting back to your question, that's what makes percussion so different and much more difficult than, you know, your clarinet or your flute.
Well, you know, so I'm always curious about things what people say. So you just mentioned that you had five kettle drums. I'm assuming they're not attached to one another, are they?
Right. No, they're not.
But do they all make a different sound?
Yes. They all have a different range and pitch.
Okay.
So your typical, what you will see on stage typically in an orchestra is four. There will be two to the player's left and two to the player's right. I was very progressive in that we had an extra small drum that's called a piccolo timpani because it's so small. I asked if I could take that home too, because there was a particular piece that I had heard on the radio and it just drew me in. And it used a piccolo timpani in it. And it was, the piece is The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. I heard that at some point, and I just wanted to play that. I wanted to practice that. I wanted to do everything about that piece. So it included a small drum. So that's how I came up with taking the whole set of five drums instead of the standard four. That's a very good question you asked.
Well, you know, and I'm also thinking about this. It's one thing when you sit down and you play a piano because you're playing the melody. When you're playing your kettle drums, is there something in the background that you are playing to develop the rhythm to that music?
Yes.
How do you practice that?
Well, initially you can, I mean, for me, I just knew the music so well that when I played the kettle drums, I heard the music while I was playing. But
in your head.
Also what you do. Yes, in my head.
Okay.
But also what you can do, and this takes a little help from the family, and you turn up the stereo very loud and you play along. Because you play, it's very difficult to hear the orchestra coming out of two speakers. So you have to really crank it up. So again, this is where I say I got so much support from my family and my brothers and sisters. They're like, oh, Raynor's just doing his thing, you know.
Yeah.
Just let him do it. And so that was very critical also that I got to do that, you know.
And you mentioned a vibraphone. I don't know what that is.
A vibraphone, well, do you know what a marimba is? Or a xylophone with the wooden bars
on top? I know what a xylophone is, okay.
So a vibraphone is very similar, except the bars are made of metal.
Oh.
And there's a little motor that turns these little fans inside of the tubes. They're called resonators that give it a vibrato effect.
Oh.
So it's used in a lot of movies, soundtracks, in pop music and jazz, et cetera, et cetera.
Interesting. Yeah, I wasn't aware about that. Let's talk some more about your nonprofit, and I know you have an exceptional mentorship program, and I'd really like to really focus on your mentorship program right now, and I will make certain that people can see that on your website when I post this about our show later today. But let's
talk
about your mentorship program and why you got it started and What is the foundation of your mentorship program?
Well, the mentorship program, I would say, is basically in two categories. And one is musical, which includes the private lessons, and they need to be consistent with that because that's how you make progress. We do master classes regularly, whether it's once a month, along with workshops that can include how to change a timpani head. Something is mundane as that, or just how to maintain your instruments. We offer performance opportunities for the students. We offer equipment assistance, as in providing the instruments for them, providing the mallets. We provide financial assistance with going to festivals, because festivals all charge a fee for an application. They all typically don't provide transportation, et cetera. We provide music supplies, the cost of traveling to the auditions, et cetera. And then the other half of the mentorship is, I would say, the social life skills that are just as important. So it's like assistance with school or job applications, learning how to write a resume and their bios, how to communicate in the professional world. And, you know, it's really creating, in addition, a safe space where the students are comfortable talking and sharing their thoughts and questions and just being themselves. So, like I say, I put it in those two categories of the musical, practical things, but also the life skills. And, you know, what I have learned is that it's hard, but it's that discipline, learning the discipline of doing something regular. Oh, it's like going to work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Once you get a job, you've got to show up and you've got to be on time and there's certain parameters you have to be in. Just getting them, introducing them to that whole thought of that's what you're going into. That's where you need to be a professional. So I would describe our mentorship program pretty much in those terms.
And are these high school age students?
They are all different ages.
Okay.
Our senior student, and we call our students protégés, by the way, has just finished his master's degree at Southern Methodist University. So I recall he's 24. And our youngest student just last week became 14. So that's a 10-year difference. So,
kidding.
To put it in what it practically means, typically the older you are, the more prepared you need to be. The younger you are, the more time you have to develop these skills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big difference in where they are. So it's not that someone that's older cannot do it. It's just they're expected to be at a different level than someone that's relatively young and starting. Yeah.
So here we are. You and I are both in the Southern California area. But somebody's listening in Boston, and they're going, shoot, this sounds like something I would like to do. How would somebody that's not living nearby, how would they be able to be part of your program? Would they be able to be?
They would. It's interesting that you just use Boston as an example. One of our newest protégés is attending the Boston Conservatory of Music. She is in her senior year, and I am personally mentoring her. Ideally, we want a mentor in the same city because that close relationship is critical, but we have to make exceptions. So that is one area that ABOP is growing. We're trying to develop and get more mentors to help out in the various cities across the country. But, But how can they apply? Well, if they go onto our website, there is a page for mentorship, and they can fill out the application. They can either print it out and send it in, or they can just submit it right there on the website, and we will get it. We will review it, and then we will ask them to do an audition. And the audition is not your typical audition. Your typical audition, you're given what you need to play. For us, knowing that many of the students will not have access to typical orchestral instruments, we leave it to the student to play what they're comfortable with, whether it is snare drum, whether it is a marimba solo or a xylophone from when they were a kid. Probably not, but just in case, we don't want to leave anyone out that has the talent and really has the drive. So then we receive their video of them playing, we review that, and if that looks good, there's one more final step that is very, very important to us, and that's having an interview. And these days it's all done on Zoom because it's very practical and easy that way.
Sure,
but in
absolutely.
That interview, we want to get to know the student more about their life, more about their interest in music. And if they're under 18, obviously with their parents there to talk and let us know what their expectations are of ABOP and what ABOP's expectations are of them. So it works both ways.
I see. Like I said, your webpage is very well put together. So besides one-on-one mentoring, what other activities occur during the year?
We have a yearly intensive, and we call it ABOP in LA. And in this week intensive, the activities include, again, master classes, workshops, a repertoire reading session with a live orchestra. We did that this year for the first time. a mock audition, and then a closing recital.
Nice.
And I think the bottom line for all of this, because I look at it as what do we need to give them, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line for all of this, I have learned, is that they benefit mostly from just being together and learning and sharing their experiences and just having other people that look like you, that have common interests. It opens them up. They feel open to talk and do and express. So that's an added benefit, is that we're all together for a week and doing all of these activities. But it's also the social thing, because when they are here, we go out to eat together. We go out to see sights together. We went to the Grammy Museum this past year. We went to Venice Beach, et cetera, et cetera. And we did some of these things that are outside of music, but really it's a part of life. So
right.
I found that they enjoyed that just as much as the musical aspect of it.
I'm sure that's true. Unfortunately, if you live in Boston, you're not going to have quite that opportunity. But for those that are local, that's really great. And, you know, I know we're looking to attract these young people, but my guess is, do you also want to attract that mentor that's listening going, dang, this is something I'd like to get involved in? Are you always open for having other people join your organization on that side, of the mentor side?
Absolutely. That's where our focus is now, because we're growing. And I just want to correct you a bit, because the protege we have in Boston, well, I put it this way. All of the proteges, we have three here, but we have four that are throughout the states. They all come together. We all come together for the ABOP in LA experience. So it's not just those that are here in LA. Yeah. So it's expensive for us, because we have to fly them here. We have to feed them. We have to put them up, et cetera, but it is so worthwhile having that experience. So, but yes, to answer your question, we are looking for more mentors, because as I said, ideally we'd love to have a mentor in each city where we have a protege, because of that one-on-one experience versus Zoom. Zoom is good for certain things. It's not great for that physical, you know, actual interaction that's really needed.
How would that person in Boston have heard about you guys if you are LA-based?
Well, she went to a convening in Detroit that myself and another mentor, and actually one of the other proteges were there. We were attending. It's the Sphinx organization. Once a year they have a convening in Detroit where they have sessions. They had an orchestra that myself and the other mentor played in, and they have a string competition, more or less. And by chance, backstage, we met this young percussionist that at the time was a junior at Boston Conservatory, and she talked with us, and we gave her the info, and she followed through and did the application, and now she's one of our proteges. So that's how we got connected up.
Even though she's in Boston and you're here.
Yeah. Yep.
God, that's cool. So I'm sure you have some success stories, and I always love hearing success stories. So why don't you share some of those with us? Because I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I would say, you know, we're so young. I mean, technically we're just 3 years, and we've only been doing the mentorship program now it's a year and a half, but I will say that we do have a success story. I arranged to have our senior protege perform as a featured soloist with the Pasadena Community Orchestra this past March, and this is the orchestra that my wife plays in. It's a community orchestra, but they have fun making music, which is the bottom line for me. So he did that. It was a big success. And then immediately following that, he finished his graduate work at Southern Methodist University, which is just outside of Dallas, this past May. And now he is starting his professional career in the Atlanta area and contributing to the community by teaching and mentoring other young percussionists. So this is something I didn't mention earlier, but this is one of our goals with the protégés, mm-hmm. is not only, you know, we want to mentor them and guide them through the music and through, you know, like I say, not just musical things, but the life skills for their own prosperity, their own success, and to reach their goals. But ideally, we'd love to have these protégés become the mentors of the next generation.
Right.
So
right.
that's what he's doing now. So I would definitely say that's a great success story for us. And he's not out of our program. He's still in our program. And by the way, our program has no boundaries, no time limits, no, okay, this is a year program or whatever. I mean, we do mm-hmm. reviews. We review their progress every 6 months. But
okay.
they're with us as long as they keep doing their work and they keep practicing and we see that they have focus. And yeah, because we know it's not anything that you learn over any small period of time. It takes a while. So.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about some of my musical experiences. And I mean, I used to go to, I'm trying to think where it was because I haven't been there for quite some time. But, you know, you go and you see a stage production of something, Annie, or something
right.
like that. And where there's an orchestra there, are your musicians ever in those kinds of orchestras?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We call that a pit orchestra. They're playing in the pit, so they're featured up on stage. But they're just as critical as the actors on stage, the lighting. You know, all it's such a critical part of the production. Obviously, if it's a musical, they have to have music. And I don't like when my wife and I go to a performance and the music is all recorded. It's not
same
as having live musicians, you know. But, you know, it's a budget. It's typically a budget thing, yeah.
Sure. That makes sense to me. And I would think, you know, I would imagine that if you love music and you, whether you play the flute or you play a percussion instrument or you play the piano, whatever you might play, you're part of a community, I guess is how I would call that. And one balances the other. That's not to say that maybe somebody doesn't have a solo or something like that, but, you know, I would think that there's, besides the musical draw, the community draw, the personal draw, I would think would also be something that's very valuable to those people that are doing, working in an orchestra, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would think that's true.
Yeah, and the discipline of playing in an orchestra is like the discipline of being on a job where you have coworkers and you need to learn how to work together. So, again, a lot of what we do is, I feel it's good for their future and their professional skills, whether they pursue music, pursue orchestral percussion, or not.
Mm-hmm. Where do you receive your support?
You know, we've gotten great support from different percussion manufacturers and companies.
Oh.
They have sent us instruments, music, supplies, I can just go on and on, and that makes a huge difference for us. Like I said earlier, having the instruments, having the correct mallets, having the right music that's required for the audition, et cetera, it makes a huge difference. We've also had individual donors who have been so generous and helpful for us. And then aside from whether it's the music or the instrument and the funding, but also equally important for me, because, you know, I'm a trained musician. I'm not trained at this administrative thing, but several members on our board have been so helpful. And I want to mention Paul Hogel, who is the president of the Cleveland Institute of Music, along with Alan Fletcher, who's the president of Astra Music Festival and School. They're both on the board, and they have been so helpful in guiding, and I consider them to be my mentors in helping me with ABOP and leading me in the direction, answering lots of questions and offering suggestions and giving their time this freely to ABOP. It's been super, super helpful.
I bet. And there is a donate button, and I'll make sure that that's included when I follow this up if people want to donate to support you. So as we look into, we're already more than halfway through this year. I don't know how this happened so quickly. What's next for you guys at ABOP?
Well, our next big occurrence is the annual Percussive Arts Society's International Convention, which is held in Indianapolis, Indiana, every November. So for the first time, thanks to the support we've gotten so far, we are able to have the entire percussion studio, all of the proteges, go to this convention.
Wow.
And the convention is for 4 days, and it includes all of the – it's like you're a percussionist drummer in a toy store. All the manufacturers are there with their instruments on the convention floor, and then throughout the day there are workshops, master classes, concerts in the evening. It's all percussion. It's all drum. If you're a drummer, you know about this, and you've got to go. You've got to go to experience this. So I remember my first time, so I'm thrilled to now take ABOP and all the proteges to this convention and have them experience this and just be overwhelmed with all it has to offer. And that's a major step for us. Again, for us being so young, but I think it's so vital for them to experience something. It can be a life-changing event for them.
I bet. Do their families get to go with them?
They can. They can join
yeah.
us. I think so far they're all trusting of myself and my wife.
Yeah,
chaperones, so to speak, for
sure.
the younger ones. But as far as I know, it's just us that's going. No, none of the parents at this point have said that they will be joining, which is fine. Maybe the parents
curious.
Need a release. They need a release
there
from the drumming in the house.
There you go. I don't know if this is. I don't know if you. I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just going to ask you. Currently, how many proteges do you have?
Originally, when we started 2023, January, we had 3. But as of last, I want to say April, we increased it to 7. So we have 7 proteges now. 3 of them are in the L.A. area. 2 of them live in Georgia. 1 is in North Carolina, and the last in, well, she's in school in Boston. So
in Mass, okay.
Around the country. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And my guess is that you would love to be able to increase those numbers.
We can do that if we have more qualified mentors.
I see. So that's a very good question. And we just have a couple minutes left, but I would ask you this. If somebody wanted to be a mentor, would they reach out to you?
Yes. Yes, and they can do
perfect.
That also through the website. Yeah,
perfect.
And we have a very, very simple email of info@abop.us. So
that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think
they
that's
can just
great.
Send me an email.
That's terrific. You know, Rainer, there's something to be said for following your passion, right? I mean, look at how young you were when you started doing this. Whoever would have guessed all these years later that you'd be still in the same field, you know, married to somebody that's also a musician. I you mentioned you have children, correct? Are any of them?
No.
Oh, you have no children. All right. I
no.
misunderstood.
No.
So, you have children, but they're just not biological. You have these young people,
right.
you know, that are young. Like you mentioned, like, how old is your youngest person that's in this part of your group?
Yeah, he just turned 14 last week.
Okay, so 14 years old. Wow. Well, you just never know what influence you're having on that young person that might end up being who you are. You know, 20 years from now. and playing in a symphony somewhere. It's wonderful what you're doing, and I feel so privileged to be able to share your story with our listeners. And you never know who's listening. I mean, that's the reality. And maybe somebody's listening to this that goes, this is exactly what I'm looking for my child. Or I'm looking for something to really motivate my lifestyle, and being a mentor sounds like a perfect way to start. So I want to thank you so very much for sharing this inspiring story with our listeners today. We never know how we touch others by what we say, but I can tell you this certainly was positive.
Oh, Marcia, it has been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, and I really do hope you'll keep me informed if you, by those that are listening, have joined you. That would make me feel really happy. But for now, everybody, I'm going to let you get on with the rest of your day. I'm going to let Rainer get on with the rest of his day. And thank you once again for joining me on the Born to Talk radio show. Bye for now, everybody.
In the dynamic world of programmatic ad buying, Viant is your ultimate CTV partner. Target with precision. Buy with confidence. Viant empowers you with AI-driven technology that reaches your audience where they engage most, ensuring your message hits home. And the campaign results? Transparent, thanks to Viant's advanced measurement suite. For media buyers who demand the best, Viant delivers. Viant, elevate your CTV campaign performance.
Ready to explore Europe the Striped way? Then fly with Condor Airlines. With nonstop flights to Frankfurt, Germany, there are great connection options to several cities. Whether it's the romantic streets of Paris or the stunning beaches of Barcelona, Condor will start your vacation by offering comfortable and spacious cabins. Fly the Striped way. Visit condor.com today.